Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. Tonight is a special night. Why is tonight like no other night? It's because if you are listening to this show when it releases, which is September 9th, 2016, that marks the 50th anniversary to the day of the first episode of Star Trek, the original series, aired in September 8th, 1966. And so, breaking with Random Trek tradition, the episode we discuss today is not randomly selected. We are going to discuss The Man Trap, which is the first episode of Star Trek ever broadcast. The we who are going to discuss it is, of course, myself, and I am joined by my lovely wife, Marisa McClellan.
Hey, Scott.
Hello. Thank you for joining me on short notice.
You're welcome.
You were readily available, and so I thought I would hoodwink you into doing this show.
Fair enough. I just got back into town today, so your timing is good.
That's right. This is actually Jason Snell's idea, was to record a random track about this episode today. So shout out to Jason Snell for thinking of it. He came up with it several weeks ago. I completely forgot about it until today. So that's how good a planner I am. So, Marisa, you've been on. This is your third time.
It is. Am I the only person to do a third appearance?
Well, I was thinking about that. I was going to introduce you as the person who has been on most frequently. But then I realized, in fact, Jason Snell has been on three times as well.
Oh, shoot.
He was on... Actually, he may have been on four times because he was also on my Leonard Nimoy memorial show. So, two more episodes and you will be my most frequent guest.
I got my fingers crossed. I'll get there someday.
You will. But you, I think that you, if people are keeping track at home, which they almost certainly are not, you have the shortest span between one appearance and the next.
That is true.
Because you were on only a few episodes ago. So people are intimately familiar with you and your voice here on Random Trek. So let's talk about Star Trek. Let's talk specifically about the original series. Have you seen a lot of the original series?
I have seen a good amount of the original series. I have watched, as you know, you and I embarked on a rewatch a while back that we never finished, I don't think. But we got well into the second season. And then I have also, I don't know if the rest of the Incomparable watchers know this or not, or listeners, I guess I should say, but I watch a lot of the episodes that you are going to talk about on this podcast.
That's true. We live together.
We have 1,000 square feet in common here. And so I've seen a lot of the original series episodes, thanks to Random Trek.
Well, there you go. We do have three TVs in 1,000 square feet, so true. I could theoretically watch it where you could not see it if you did not want to see it.
True, but you like to watch it on the best TV, which is the one in the living room. So
that is true. We also have countless screens on which I could watch Star Trek, because I could watch Star Trek on any number of my devices.
All right, well, fine. You could watch it without me, but somehow, conveniently, I end up watching a lot of it with you.
So have you ever seen, well, you must have seen The Man Trap then before.
Yeah, I mean, when we started our rewatch, it feels like it's got to be 4 or 5 years ago now. We certainly started with the first episode, but if you had asked me until before today, tell me about the first episode of Star Trek ever, I would have been very hard-pressed to have recounted anything about that episode. Oh,
and this is, so people who are listening probably already know this, but this is in fact the first, so we have to be very specific because
yes.
Star Trek fans are nothing if precise. So people who are listening, I do know that even though I said this is the first Star Trek episode, it is in fact the first broadcast Star Trek episode, not the first produced Star Trek episode, not the pilot. It was, in fact, I believe this fifth or sixth episode that was filmed, and they decided to show this episode first for a variety of reasons, because this was, they thought some of the other episodes they already had were too cerebral. The one they really wanted to show, which I don't remember, didn't have its special effects finished yet, so they wanted something that was kind of adventurous, would introduce the characters well, and they thought that people would like it. So they picked The Man Trap from the four or five that they had. And they certainly weren't going to do the pilot, because the pilot did not have Captain Kirk in it, had Spock, but a different looking Spock, had no Dr. McCoy. So It was a different show that first pilot, so which we see later in The Menagerie. So
true enough.
There you go. I just had to point that out because I know somebody's listening, and when they heard us say the first Star Trek episode, they got very angry. So no, don't worry, angry person. I know it's not the first Star Trek episode,
but the first one that a lot of people saw.
That's true. This is the episode that 50 years ago introduced the world to Star Trek. And neither one of us were alive 50 years ago, but if we saw this episode, if Star Trek did not exist, and today this is the first episode of Star Trek I ever saw in my life, I'm not sure I would start a Star Trek podcast. It's not to say that it's a bad episode. I think it's actually a good episode, but it is, when we've talked about Star Trek before, the original series in particular, it is a 50-year-old TV show, and with that comes some interesting things. The pacing, you turned to me as we were watching this and said, basically, you wanted to know if it was over.
No, I think I just said, oh my God, this is so slow. It's just, you know, there's not a lot of story in this episode, but they make it fill 50 minutes.
They
do
indeed. They try their darndest to film it. I should say. The story, there is no... Well, I guess there could be a B plot if you think about McCoy's journey through accepting the fact that this person is not who they appear to be. It's really pretty much all A plot.
Yeah.
Not complicated. Very straightforward. Although I wonder, I mean, I don't know... Obviously, having seen so much Star Trek before, I have not had the experience of this being the first Star Trek thing I have ever seen. And I don't know if this was, you know, a revolution to people in the 1966 when they saw it for the very first time. I probably could have done some research. I have read a book about Star Trek that talks about how this episode was received. But, of course, people who listen to The Incomparable know that I read many books, and I almost forget everything about any book I read after I finish it. So I don't remember anything about These Are the Voyages, TOS Season 1, which I read, which was very good, but I don't remember anything about it. But anyway, so maybe we should just hop to what this episode is about.
Yeah, let's go there.
Since I have no other fun facts about it, because I can't remember anything about it. This episode, let's talk about... Do we think, so we obviously are familiar with Spock, McCoy, Kirk. I'm trying to think of all the characters that show up in this episode. So obviously the first three, Sulu, Yeoman Rand. I think those may be the only recurring characters that show up. Oh, Marisa's shaking her head. Oh, Uhura. I forget about Uhura. My apologies to Uhura. In a very strange interaction, Uhura's kind of main. She has two strange interactions. The second one, not as strange as the first, I feel.
Yeah, and it almost made me feel like perhaps she and Spock had had other interactions in other episodes that were not aired. But they have this very strange interaction where it's as if she's sort of trying to flirt with him, but in this very sort of, I mean, it's a 50-year-old episode, a strange sort of dated way of kind of trying to cajole him into asking her for a date.
Yes. He's not interested.
No.
He doesn't. And I think, you know, this is not, I don't think they ever thought, the people who are writing this thought this was going to be the first episode of Star Trek that people saw, but they certainly knew it was the first season, so it wasn't outside of their realm of possibility that this may be the first time you would see these characters. And so they want to show the otherness of Spock, right, and how he is logical and emotionless. So if you frame this kind of weird interaction between Spock and Uhura, where she's basically saying, you know, you should tell me I'm pretty, and we should hang out, and Spock is kind of like, I don't, why would I do that? It tells you immediately, because Uhura is an attractive woman, she's wearing a tiny little dress, as the women in the original series do, and she's laying it on thick for Spock. So you, I guess you're supposed to take away from that, you're supposed to say, oh goodness, this is not a regular red-blooded American, because he's green-blooded, and he's from Vulcan. Which, by the way, has no moon, apparently.
Who knew? I didn't know.
Uhura didn't know, because she said that Spock should be telling her about the moonlight on Vulcan. And Spock replied, Vulcan doesn't have a moon. And she said, I am not surprised by that. And then she has another interaction with Spock when Captain Kirk, they go down to this planet and bad things happen and somebody's dead. So Captain Kirk's or McCoy, I think, says, oh no, somebody's dead, beam us up. And Spock is like, okay. And Uhura says, don't you want to go down to the transporter room and figure out what's happening? And he said, the transporter room is well manned. They do not need me. I will be summoned if I'm needed. And she says, well, what if Captain Kirk is the one who's dead? We don't know who's dead. He's your only friend, or the closest thing you have to a friend, is actually what she says. And he once again says, you know, hey, if they need me, they'll call. Spoiler alert, Captain Kirk does not die in the first episode of Star Trek that is broadcast on TV. This is not written by George R. R. Martin, so Captain Kirk survives. So I guess we should go through the plot. But I did take also, I am fascinated by how well built the world is in the first season of original series, and I always am. So they've got transporters. They've got the turbo lift. They call them turbo lift. They had something else that I jotted down. The one thing that they didn't have, sick bay. We noticed they call sick bay the dispensary, which is kind of a, seems like a British word. I don't know if maybe on military ships they call them dispensaries. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like that is a naval term often. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe. Who knows? And, of course, Captain Kirk, Dr. McCoy, Spock all are kind of pretty firmly established in their characters, even in this first episode, I feel like. The only Dr. McCoy is, this is a point at which they didn't know if they wanted Leonard McCoy to be a regular character or just kind of a featured player. So he is not in prime time in the credits, but this episode does pretty much focus on him. And Sulu spends a lot of time in
the botany lab.
Yes, that's where he eats his salad that he has Yeoman Rand deliver to him for some reason. And we can talk about Yeoman Rand as well. She's always been an interesting character on the original series. I remember he spent a lot of time in the Botany Bay in this episode. And I thought, well, maybe they had rewritten his character. But then at the end of it, he's piloting the Enterprise. So I guess he just hangs out there. He likes to eat his lunch.
Maybe it's just the greenhouse.
Weird flower.
Yeah, it's a hand in a weird glove.
Yes. So the Man Trap, probably one of the most famous Star Trek episodes. So we can go through it, probably the plot very quickly. And as you said, Marisa, the plot, there's not a whole heck of a lot of plot, so we can go through it and then talk about the weird moments. They arrive at this planet, M113, because I guess apparently they could not think of better names for planets. This planet was home to a long dead civilization, and so on the whole planet, there are only two people who are researchers. Well, one of them is a researcher. The other is the researcher's wife, because it's 50 years ago. So she just kind of hangs out, I suppose, helping him do archaeology. And in their contract, apparently, with the Federation, it says that every year, a ship's doctor has to stop by and give them a physical to make sure everything's copacetic. And the rest of the year, I guess, they live in solitude. Although they do mention that some ships stop by every once in a while. And they send out reports, Spock says.
And artifacts,
yes. And the twist here is that there's a curmudgeonly old professor. He is married to the one that got away from McCoy. The one in McCoy's past, the one woman who he regrets, I suppose, not having a relationship with.
We're not marrying, I guess. That was really the implication, I thought, that they were an item and that,
oh, yes,
that he went off and pursued his career and did not
pursue her.
Yes.
She ended up, Nancy, ended up marrying Dr. Robert Crater, who is none too pleased to see the Enterprise folks.
And who strangely had a sort of a weird old school New York accent a little bit.
He did. And I recognized the actor vaguely, and I meant to look up who it was, and I'm sure people are yelling into their podcast of choice. Alfred Ryder. He looks familiar. But maybe not. Let's see what he's known.
He looked familiar to me, too. I think he must have been in a bunch of stuff over the years.
Yes, he's been in a whole heck of a lot of stuff. He was on Escape. He was in Escape to Witch Mountain.
Oh, you know what? That is where he is most familiar to me
there
from.
You go.
I watched that movie at least 25 times in my childhood.
I have never seen that movie, but he was in it. Oh, Marisa, are you giving me that look that I should have see that movie?
I think that it was probably more of a movie that appealed to little girls than little boys. So,
and he was in Tracks with Dean Stockwell, another famous, not Star Trek, but science fiction actor. Anyway, so he's down there with his wife. He actually, we don't meet him first. We meet Nancy first. Mm-hmm. And Spock. No, Spock nope. doesn't beam down. McCoy and Kirk beam down.
And with, Darnell.
Darnell, yes. And as soon as they beam down, the other thing that this episode also introduces us to, which is something that has stayed through every iteration of Star Trek, is the Captain's Log voiceover. So we get Captain Kirk telling us that they have to go to this planet. They're checking this out. They want to do this. We also, this one is interesting in that there's some foreshadowing, because Captain Kirk in his log tells us, you know, bad things happen, and then we see it happening. And there are others, some other interesting things that we can talk about. But they beam down. They meet Nancy, and Dr. McCoy is like, oh my God, Nancy, you haven't aged a day. You look like just like you looked 10 years ago. And so it's, you know, the woman who plays her looks lovely. And then they kind of switch to a close-up of Kirk, and Kirk is introducing himself to Nancy, and then they switch back to her, and she looks different. She looks older. They've put a lot of gray in her hair, you know, Kirk is like, well, whatever. He's like, you know, she's actually later in the episode, he says, she's a handsome woman, but let's not go crazy.
Yeah, she's no 25-year-old.
Exactly. So you think, something's odd. It's not super subtle, but I guess you could miss it. Except when Darnell then shows up and he gets introduced to Nancy, he sees someone, a completely different actress,
yeah.
Who looks nothing like what Captain Kirk and Dr. McCoy have seen. She's much younger, dressed in much less.
And sassy blonde.
She is a sassy blonde who he had met on a pleasure planet. So this is another... Ooh, Marisa winked at me. We all know what that means. It wasn't Risa. I would have been impressed if Risa had made an appearance. But apparently the concept of pleasure planets, critical to Star Trek. Right at the beginning, we have whole planets devoted to nothing but pleasure. So she thinks, oh my goodness, it's you. Everybody... So the original series is interesting because women are treated very differently. And I bring this up because he, is like, oh my goodness, I thought I met you on, you look exactly like this woman I met on a pleasure planet. And Captain Kirk is like, get out of here with that talk. And they basically make him leave. And it didn't seem, I mean, it seemed a little slightly inappropriate, but he wasn't like, hubba hubba, come over, give me a kiss. But they kick him out, because I don't know why. And then McCoy is talking to her, and Captain Kirk is talking to her mostly so that we can see, you know, they keep switching between young Nancy and old Nancy, young Nancy and old Nancy. And then she goes off because they want to see where the doctor is that they came to check out, or the professor. Is he a doctor or a professor? He's a doctor. And so off she goes to find, seemingly to find, her husband. And then the husband comes, arrives, and he's upset that everyone's here, and he wants them to get off the planet. He doesn't need their help. He says, you know, that you can see clearly that we're healthy, so you don't need to bother with your tests. The tests, of course, consist of Dr. McCoy waving his little tricorder thing at him for like 2 minutes, so it doesn't seem like why is it that big of a deal? Although we find out perhaps why he doesn't want them to be medically examined later. And while this is happening, Darnell is killed. And we find him. She screams. Nancy starts to scream, right? And that's why everyone runs out to go see her, see what's wrong. Turns out that we find the corpse of Darnell laying on this ledge, and he has something in his mouth. And it's a plant that apparently he has decided, well, this is what Nancy says. She came across him. He was just about to put this plant in his mouth, and she said, don't do that. It's poison. And he did it anyway, and then he died.
Yes, because all Starfleet all Starfleet members go around eating unfamiliar shrubbery from foreign planets.
It's just what you do. It looked tasty. And apparently it actually was, I forget what they call it, but it was a known poisonous plant.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but they said it was the same in the nightshade family.
Yes, which isn't our tomatoes, nightshades?
Yeah, potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, stuff like that.
All delicious.
All, yeah.
And then we do, so yeah, and an important plot point. The doctor doesn't want Dr. McCoy to examine him, but he really wants salt.
Yep.
And Nancy also asks about salt. And then she comes back later and she says, have you asked him about salt? And he's like, yes, I asked about salt. So they really want salt because it's hot on this planet and they need salt.
Apparently they're sweating a lot, burning through all their salt.
Apparently. We find out later they started with 25, or the last time someone gave them salt, they'd started with 25 pounds and now they have, seemingly, it looked like they had like a pound or 2 pounds left.
No, but he showed him that bottle and it had maybe 6 ounces of salt.
Oh, well, you're better at estimating.
I work with salt a lot.
That's true. I will see our salt estimating to you. So they need more salt is what we're finding out. Which seems odd to me, but everybody's like, okay, we know you need salt. We'll get you your salt.
So I have to tell you something. I just came up with a brilliant alternative title for this episode.
Oh.
Assault for salt.
I don't know if it's that brilliant, I've got to say, but
I like it. I'm pleased with it.
Well, good job.
Thank you.
So yeah, Darnell dead. The other thing that to note, he's got wacky discoloration on his face. Dr. McCoy doesn't come off the best in this episode because he thinks that that's just perhaps a side effect of the plant. And then they beam up and he examines the body and can't figure out why he's died and what's happening. And Captain Kirk is mad because somebody's dead and he wants answers, damn it. And the doctor isn't helping. Nobody knows what's going on. And then he does some more tests and it turns out that he has no salt. The salt has been sucked out of his face, basically. We don't know that yet, but that's what's happened. He's had all of the salt has been removed from his body, which Spock says would, of course, cause instant death. I'm not sure if that's true. I don't know. I mean, it's impossible to suck all the salt out of somebody, so who knows? I will assume that, in fact, it is true. and so they beam down to the planet again because, you know, they have to do their examination still of the doctor and Nancy. And they beam down with a couple other people. One of those people dies again. And so everybody's like, OMG, we got to get out of here. Kirk, McCoy, and actually, so Nancy kills Green, which is one of the guy's names, right? And then we see, so up until this point, we have seen that she looks different to different people. But you could, I guess, theoretically, if you're not really paying attention, think maybe that she just, they're using like a different camera filter or something. So they show us, she looks like Nancy, and then she kind of switches to green right in front of the viewer's eyes. So now we know something's up.
True enough.
She's a shapeshifter. And normally, women cannot do that. Even 50 years ago, women could not do that. Earth women, at least. So we know something's up. We don't. They don't know that the green is now been replaced by whatever this thing is. So they say we got to get out of here because the professor has run off because he doesn't want them to be there. He is done with the Federation. It's like get off my planet, damn it! So they get off his planet, but they just go to the Enterprise. But they take green with them,
not knowing
that it is actually
the salt sucker.
The salt sucker. That's another brilliant name.
Thank you. Thank you.
It could have been the salt trap.
Oh.
But it's not. It's the man trap. And so Green is up there looking around, being kind of creepy.
Yeah. Watching
and this Yeoman is where Yeoman Rand comes in.
Shaking salt.
Shaking salt. So apparently, I don't know, I am unfamiliar, if people have listened to the episode with Mike Cole, people know that I am unfamiliar with many military goings-ons. So when I saw, you know, The Next Generation and Wesley Crusher driving the Enterprise, I thought that was ridiculous. Mike Cole tells me no, cadets often pilot very expensive military equipment, which makes me fear for my life, but okay, I guess, you know, hey, you have to learn somehow, right? Just like yeah. A surgeon has to
practice
on somebody for the first time. So I don't know what a yeoman does, is my way of saying this, but apparently in the original series, a yeoman did a couple of things. One of them is hand things to other people to sign. We see that a lot.
True.
The other thing is bring trays of food to people. We see two yeomans do this because Captain Kirk is eating like oddly colored blocks of cucumber, perhaps, or melon. We don't know.
Well, and in this episode, today we watched it without the enhanced effects. And mm-hmm. so I feel like I get a better idea of what those weird cubes were. And it sounded like a cucumber, like it crunched like a cucumber that had just been colored with brightly colored food coloring.
Yes. So Captain Kirk has a snack at some point on the bridge. And then he leaves to go somewhere, and standing in the background is a yeoman with a little tray that Captain Kirk just kind of throws his plate on. So apparently that's what she does. Yeoman Rand is chilling in front of the turbo lift, I think, with a tray that has some weirdly colored things on it, and then like red celery.
Yeah, like three stalks of celery with some like futuristic dip or something on them.
Yes, a little fun dip.
Although I will say she was eating one of the pieces of celery off of,
in fact, eat
Sulu's plate, which I thought was
maybe she's not the best showman.
Perhaps not.
Or she was just hungry. I don't know. Maybe they hang out and they share lunch.
Well, they needed to give her reason to use the salt.
That's true. So yeah, she's standing there, and the important thing to note is that there are salt and pepper shakers on the tray. Salt and pepper shakers, apparently, that Marisa, your grandparents had.
My grandparents had the same salt. So, I mean, they, you know, very 1960.
They look like nice salt and pepper shakers, and they would look futuristic. So they didn't seem out of place on the Enterprise. And so Green is kind of, he looks a little green. He's all kind of sweaty and gross. He goes up to, he sees Yeoman Ryan at a distance. And then, of course, at that moment, she decides, this red celery looks delicious. Let me sprinkle some salt onto it so I can eat it, which she does. And then I think the camera even zooms in on her sprinkling the salt onto it so that the viewer, who apparently in 50 years ago, perhaps not so bright on the uptake, or maybe there are a lot of things happening. I don't know what, but they make it obvious. He sees it. He goes crazy. He doesn't really go crazy, but he wants that salt. So it goes up to Yeoman Rand. And at this point, we know that this monster, which I guess is a loaded term, this alien, sucks salt out of people and kills them. So we know this is no good.
True enough.
Yeoman Rand, watch out, you say to the TV. Turns out Green decides not to talk for some reason. It's unclear to me how this creature's powers work. But it seems to do with either it can mimic someone, the way someone looks, or it can read the mind of someone and based on the strength of their memories, come up with that person that they think they are going to see. And then they also kind of get memories as them, because Nancy, in the beginning, when she meets Dr. McCoy, and she isn't Nancy, she knows Dr. McCoy's little nickname, which was Plum, apparently. Which we never hear again. No one ever calls Dr. McCoy Plum, to my knowledge.
I wish they did.
Good old Dr. Leonard Plum McCoy. they call him Bones instead of Plum. Bones seems like a better name than Plum.
True enough.
Or Pluot. Anyway, so she...
Plum Cut.
Oh, dear. That's another episode. So she Yeoman Rand does not get killed, but Green is kind of creepy. To him.
And so she takes the tray to Sulu, and Green follows them in, and they'd made a big show at that point too of her stroking the sentient plant.
Yes. There's another thing that we didn't mention. So they go into the turbo lift. There are a couple other dudes in the turbo lift. Nancy cannot attack Yeoman Rand. And then she leaves. Green follows her. And then the two dudes are kind of leering after Yeoman Rand, and they're like, how would you like your own personal yeoman, they say to one another. And I was like, what? That's totally... The Enterprise is just full of creeps.
A little bit.
What I said at that point.
A little bit.
Because everybody's leering at Yeoman Rand. And don't get me wrong, Yeoman Rand is an attractive lady, and she's probably wearing the shortest dress on the ship. It was of the time.
Let's face it, that was not a dress. That was a shirt, and she forgot her pants because that
is a mini skirt, isn't it?
It is a micro mini.
That was a thing, right?
It was.
She was very on trend with her giant beehive hair and her
true
micro
enough.
Mini, I guess. I don't know.
I still feel like they should have given those ladies some pants.
Well, she does have tights, right? Doesn't she have tights?
I don't think so.
Oh, I thought she did. Maybe not.
Maybe. I don't know.
But she certainly has boots.
That are made for walking.
That's right. And this is that comes up in Trials and Tribulations, the DS9 episode, in which Dax goes back in time and she has to wear the uniform mm-hmm. and the micro mini. And she posits that she would like that uniform to come back. So she liked it. So, but anyway, so everyone's leering at Yeoman Rand. Yeoman Rand visits Sulu, who is hanging out in the Botany Bay, and she strokes this plant that seems to be sentient, and it is clearly a dude is under this table and his arm is through a tube, and they have given him a weirdly like a macrame-made glove that kind of looks like a plant so that he can, or a flower really, so he can move it around. And they set this up. It's called Mildred or something. They give it a name. I don't remember.
I don't remember the name of the plant.
I don't know. Sulu gets his food. He's very happy. They have a little chat, Yeoman Rand and Sulu. Green barges in. Yeoman Rand is like, oh, Green's not talking today because he has not said a word. Because once again, I think what we're supposed to take away from that is that Nancy doesn't know what Green sounds like, so she doesn't want to talk.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
So she can't talk, but she wants the salt. Good Lord, does she want the salt? And it's also unclear why she needs so much salt. You feel like she has sucked, at this point, I think three people have died already.
Yeah.
She's taken all the salt from three different people, and yet she wants more salt. Come on, Nancy.
Well, maybe there's not enough salt in a person. I don't know how much salt's in a human body.
I don't either.
But so the important thing, too, is that when Green comes in, the plant freaks out.
Yes, the plant is not happy. And then, is that why Green runs away? I think so.
I think so.
And off she goes. And then she starts killing people on the Enterprise.
Yeah, and then becomes like someone who flirts with Uhura.
See, this is more of my theory. And so she kills a couple people on the Enterprise. There's a high body count in this episode.
True enough. This, you know what this episode also establishes is Richard. The expendability of certain, you know, characters.
Non-name. Well, yeah. I guess they all have names, but main characters kind of fall to the wayside.
True enough.
Yeah, and so Uhura comes out of the turbo lift once again, and Green or Nancy or whatever we're going to call him shifts again mm-hmm. based on what Uhura's thinking about. So Uhura's talking, I think she was talking to someone, maybe flirting a little bit on the turbo lift. She comes out, and there's this man, African American guy, who is tall and good looking, and it really kind of gets a little too close to Uhura. And she's like, do I know who you are, crewman? And he says, you were just thinking of me, which then led me to believe that this monster, alien, whatever you want to call it, can read your thoughts and shape itself into what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
And so Uhura's like, oh, okay. That's kind of weird. And then he starts speaking Swahili.
Yes. And then she responds in kind,
mm-hmm.
is kind of charmed.
She's a little charmed. And then he says, it feels like this is where actually, so that at some point, maybe before this, Kirk posits that no Starfleet officer or one of my men, I don't remember what he says, would be attacked, would let this happen to them unless they were paralyzed in some way or incapacitated. And so he posits, based on very little evidence, that whatever has happened to them paralyzes them and then sucks away their salt. And this, we find out, is true because it seems to happen to Uhura. She's kind of hypnotized
mm-hmm.
And she can't do anything. And, you know, her name is called, Captain Kirk is like Uhura to the bridge. Three times he says that. And then people, like a whole mess of people come by and that kind of breaks the spell. And Uhura's like, I gotta go. And off she goes. So Uhura survives the man trap as well. In this case, she's a woman trap.
Yeah, so maybe that's why she survived, because she's... I don't know. That's a bad theory.
And this is... and I guess we need to talk about the other kind of... While this is happening, McCoy's kind of freaking out because he doesn't know where Nancy is. Everybody thinks Nancy's missing. They're looking for Nancy. They don't know Nancy's on the ship because they don't know that Nancy's not Nancy. And so McCoy is crazy, can't go to sleep, Captain Kirk suggests that he just take one of those red pills that he gave them a week before and he'll go to sleep, to which Dr. McCoy says, all right. And then he turns in his quarters and he has a giant pill bottle full of sleeping pills just right there, which seems perhaps to indicate Dr. McCoy has a problem with addiction to sleeping pills. I don't know.
Because the alternate idea that he's storing excess, you know, dispensary drugs in his quarters seems a little bit problematic,
it
too.
It seems odd. And I would have bought it if it was like one or two, but it's like a giant bottle full of, yes, which look like jelly beans, but...
probably were.
They probably were. But he decides he's not going to take one because he just wants to go to sleep. And so... some roundabout way, they're still looking for Nancy. They're scanning the planet because they think she's lost. They know where the professor is, or the doctor, because they found him. And then 100-mile radius, they don't see any other human life forms, because they don't know that Nancy's on the ship. Nancy is kind of wandering around the ship, not knowing where anything is, and she comes across Dr. McCoy's quarters because they are labeled as Dr. McCoy's quarters, which seems odd, but I guess maybe not. I don't know. So she lets herself in, right?
Yeah.
Because there are no locks, apparently, on your doors. And Dr. McCoy's kind of chilling, and he's like, oh my gosh, Nancy, I just talked to Captain Kirk, and he said he didn't know where you were, and now you're here. This is fantastic, but why didn't Captain Kirk tell me? And she's like, well, I don't know why Captain Kirk didn't tell you, but let's go into your quarters and hang out. And so they hang out for a little bit, and Nancy's like, oh, Dr. McCoy, or I guess she calls him Plum or Leonard or something, you look so tired. And he's like, well, yeah, I was worried sick about you. And Captain Kirk said I should take one of these pills, but I didn't want to. And she's like, oh, you should totally take one of those pills. And it wasn't clear to me why she wanted him to take those pills, but she did. And so he does. And he goes to sleep. And then what happens to her?
They scan the room. The camera pans the room.
Oh, that's right. That's why she wants to take
it. Yes. And then when you come back, she had been standing there sort of biting her knuckle.
I guess she was biting her knuckle because she was in suspense to see if Dr. McCoy would take the pill. He does. He's out cold. They pan the room, like Marisa was saying. And now Dr. McCoy is standing where Nancy was because she's taken over his form.
Biting his knuckle.
So that she can do something, walk around.
So she can get the salt.
She wants the gosh darn salt. And this is, at this very moment, Captain Dr. McCoy has summoned to the bridge to help figure out how to track down Nancy. And so they summon him to the bridge, and actually they find out that something's killing people on the Enterprise, and they want to figure out what's happening. And he says, Dr. McCoy / Nancy / Green / the salt vampire says, well, maybe I can help you find the creature. And Sulu is like, what creature? And this is like, oh, perhaps you have said too much, Dr. McCoy. But then Dr. McCoy's like, well, it's probably something like a creature, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. off they go to... figure out what's going on. I forgot what happened. Salt, professor, companionship, blah, blah, blah. So, this is when they go down and they find out.
Yeah, the doctor finally confesses.
Yes, so Spock and Kirk beam down to the planet while all this is happening, right? And they look for the professor, the doctor, Dr. Crater. And he shoots at them, and he's like, go away, I don't want to talk to you. And they finally kind of have him break him down, and he says, okay, I'll talk to you.
Don't they stun him with this?
They do stun him.
Which was a dramatic special effect. It sort of, he goes flying backwards.
He goes flying backwards, like they sped up the film, and they had like an inappropriate like zinging sound effect, which I did not care for. But the other part of it looked good. And then, so he's stunned, he feels groggy, and this is when he confesses that she's the last of her kind. And they're like, what are you talking about? And this is when we find out that so they're on this dead planet, or this planet devoid of intelligent life. And it seems as though there is one last one, and they need salt to live, and their planet ran out of salt. And so she killed Nancy, the actual Nancy, his wife, Nancy, took her salt, and then he was so upset. He was going to kill this monster alien thing, but he decided, no, it's the last of their kind. She has a right to live as much as anyone. And so it's unclear to me if when there are not other people on the planet, if this alien acts as though it is his wife.
That was the impression I got, that the essentially the alien has taken over the role of his wife.
I don't know.
which led me to wonder, are they living as man and wife?
I would Fascinating. Assume that that's what's happened. And so he doesn't want them to kill the monster. I keep calling it a monster, but it's really an alien. Because this is an interesting thing that Star Trek does, right? They create these kind of horrific-looking things, which we do find out later that it looks pretty ugly. But you kind of feel for it because it's the last of its kind, and it's really just trying to eat. And but that being said, salt is not that hard to come by. And I feel like if it had just waited a little bit, they would have just beamed down like 100 pounds of salt. And it would have been fine.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure why it just didn't wait. But it could not curb its own need for salt and killing people, apparently. If only this is a lesson we will learn from this episode. If you don't want to get in trouble, don't murder 5 people.
Fair enough.
Kids, write that down. Don't forget it. And so the big climactic scene, it happens in McCoy's quarters. McCoy is kind of chilling out. Nancy is there and about to take his salt when Kirk and Spock burst in. She's going to take the salt from Kirk. And Spock bursts in and he's like, McCoy, it's clearly not Nancy. Why are you not shooting? And McCoy's like, no, it's Nancy. I can't shoot Nancy. And he's like, she's going to kill the captain. And then Spock goes and punches her a couple times with good 1960s stagecraft fighting, which looks not realistic at all. But his point is, if I did this to Nancy, would she still be standing? And she was none the worse for wear. And McCoy was like, probably not. And so that kind of convinces McCoy. And then she gets shot with a phaser, and she reverts to her natural form, which is like this, I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of like a salty sea hag. That's how I describe
that's
it.
That's your,
And she's kind of
with suckers on
her
fingers.
Suckers on her fingers, which then now makes sense. The round rings that we find on the faces of everyone, because you know, if you're going to suck the salt out of someone, the best place to suck the salt out of is through their salty, salty faces, apparently. And so, oh no, Nancy's an alien, the last of her kind, and they kill her.
Because that's what they do on the Star Trek
that's what they do.
Original series.
And it is, I guess, self-defense, but it seems not that great. But then at the end, so the professor, Dr. Crater, I guess they leave him down there? Do they take him? No, he's dead. Does he die?
I don't think they killed him.
I think they just leave him down there.
defend for himself.
I guess they don't give him any, they don't show us. Oh no. According to Memory Alpha, Crater gets killed by the creature. Oh, that's right. So the creature kills Crater when it came across Spock and Crater.
And then it doesn't kill Spock because, as Spock says, his ancestors swam in a different ocean.
That's right. So he has different blood thing, doesn't want it. So Crater's dead. The alien is dead. Before Crater died, and kind of as his excuse for not telling them about the alien, is that it was the last of its kind, much like the buffalo. You know, there used to be millions of buffalo, and now they're extinct. And that story apparently did not have a big impact at the time of the killing the creature. But at the end of the episode, Captain Kirk is kind of sitting in his captain's chair. He's a little pouty. And Spock's like, why are you pouty? And Captain Kirk says, I was just thinking about the buffalo. And then, which is a great kind of Star Trek-y end of an episode.
Yeah.
Because you know that what that means, obviously, is that Captain Kirk is thinking about the ramifications of what just happened. They killed the last of its kind, and that's kind of antithetical to their whole mission, and yet they had to do it to save his crew, and so, you know, it's one of these moral quandaries. And that is The Man Trap. 50 yeah. years ago, the first ever episode broadcast of Star Trek. What did you think?
I was really, I mean, there, So, you know, it's hard to kind of think about a life without Star Trek. It's always been mm-hmm. present. And so it's interesting to watch this and see how much of what we know as Star Trek was present from the very first episode, like we talked about earlier. It was also interesting, and I said this, and you said, save it for the podcast.
That's right. Now, this is why I asked you
know.
This question.
And one of the things I was really impressed with was how much diversity there was. Mm-hmm. And this must have been just so revolutionary in its time to see people, you know, people of color. There were, you know, you saw a lot about sort of just kind of cast players who were mm-hmm. African-American, who were Asian, women, men all together in one space, which was not how, it's not even how the military looks now. It's and true. So to a large degree. And so it yeah. really must have been shocking to people.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I give the original series a little short shrift, right? Because the women, even though they are serving together, most of them are serving meals or handing pads to things. But Uhura is an active participant. She's on the bridge.
Yeah.
She's doing stuff. It's clear, like, that she's needed on the bridge. And when, you know, they call her up when she's about to get the salt sucked out of her face. And I don't think any viewer of Star Trek could ever say that Uhura is not an important member of the crew. And so that is, you know, the rest, like Yeoman Rand, is carrying trays of food around and handing things to people. But still, you know, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got Sulu. You've got a lot of other kind of multi-ethnic background folks. And so it must have been, I'm just repeating exactly what you said, but it's yeah. true. It must have been something very different than, you know, certainly you don't turn on a science fiction show 50 years ago and think that that's what you're going to see. So kudos to Gene Roddenberry and the people who did this. Because they've really set a high bar, which I'm not sure if Star Trek has actually carried on for certain realms of representation. Certainly it has. There have been increasingly more people of color, and obviously roles for women have gotten much better.
Yeah.
But there are still, perhaps in Star Trek Discovery, we will see more of you know, sexual orientations and of people of various physical abilities represented, and that'll be great too.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. Yeah, especially since TV is a lot whiter these days than it was in the original series of Star Trek mm-hmm. 50 years ago. So
it's true. Well, yeah, and I will say this, that I hadn't seen The Man Trap in probably a few years since we started our yeah. first rewatch, which we abandoned before we got to the third season, which might be why we abandoned it. I think it still works. It is clearly slowly paced now, but it's an interesting story. I feel like even if it was a second season episode, they would have done more with the moral quandary of the last of its kind, and it's just kind of trying to be save itself. But I still think it's a good episode. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
So watch it, and happy 50th anniversary, Star Trek. And now I will thank Marisa. Marisa, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.